Hello there, and you are very welcome back to the RTE Rugby Podcast. We're out of hibernation, glowing with our beautiful suntans, ready to go once again for a new season of rugby, and a season of rugby that is going to be stretching up right up through till August of next year with a British and Irish Lions tour to come. A lot ahead of us in the next 11 months, but to get through what we're expecting to see over the next year for the first part of the season, I'm joined by Bernard Jackman and Johnny Holland. Fellas, how we doing? Bernard, you're back from your summer hijinks over in Paris.
Yeah, had a great summer. Last autumn I was in Paris for 6 weeks for the Rugby World Cup, and this year, 2024, I was managed to be down there for about a month. Phenomenal Olympics. I think they did an incredible job, the French, in both the World Cup and the Olympics. But and Team Ireland were excellent. We unfortunately didn't contribute to the medals, but it was an amazing thing to be part of. But keen to be back. I've forgotten we were gone till August. I thought last year was the longest rugby season I can
sorry,
remember.
Sorry for breaking it to you.
No, it's good. It's good. Look, the Lions tour. That'll definitely keep us going. But back into it now, and obviously an Inter Pro to start off round one of the URC is always good. So straight into it.
And Johnny, not as glamorous a summer for yourself, for me. For yourself, though, you've got AIL kicking off this weekend, and what a way to start it. Repeat of the final against Terenure this Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, you'll have a lot of interest, won't you? So it's, it's if you're looking at tough fixtures, like going straight back into it. But it's great. You know, I think sometimes when you're off, it's kind of hard to get right back into it, and there's nothing like a repeat of a final to get things back up and running and get your focus a small bit. So a bit of a summer away from it, to be fair, but straight back into it, no messing.
Yeah, my first week of the season is starting off slowly. We were on our Terenure Junior Rugby Tour of Vienna at the weekend, so still just about coming round to things. We had a great match on Friday night in some of the worst weather I've ever played in my entire life. It was 31 degrees, beautiful weather about 10 days ago over there. And when we landed on Friday, it was chucking it down with rain. It was 7 degrees, gale winds. It was like we got on a plane and went to January. It was absolutely brutal. But we had a fantastic match. We were playing Vienna Celtic. We had great fun over there. 4 great days. And
what's Vienna like for a rugby tour? I'd never been there.
It was great. So we played Vienna Celtic on the Friday night, who entertained us well. And in fairness, have two great pitches there. Yeah. They had a nice little setup. I think they were the Austrian champions or the Vienna champions or something like that. And the following day, we were meant to go down to the other rugby club, Donau Rugby Club, to watch some rugby down there. But as I said, the weather was so bad, that was all called off. But we just went down there anyway.
The pub was so nice.
They had a lovely new clubhouse that we had to test out. So we did the grand opening of the clubhouse. But I suppose, Bernard, you'll probably know as well, we could be hearing a lot more about links between Irish and Austrian rugby over the next couple of years, but a certain out half coming through the ranks at Leinster. So put a pin in that, and we'll keep an eye on it. But look, we'll get straight into it. We've a lot to get through for the new season. We'll start, guys, with some of the news that I think we were all expecting. Simon Easterby yesterday confirmed as the Ireland interim head coach, while Andy Farrell is off on Lions duty. So Farrell will hand over the keys to his defence coach after the November test. Easterby will then run things for the Six Nations and next summer's tour, which isn't confirmed yet, but we believe it's going to be around Georgia or Romania or both, or some sort of games against those teams is what we're expecting. Birch, as I said, it's something we were expecting. It's a move that upskills everyone. Andy Farrell gets to test himself at the Lions. Simon Easterby gets to give himself a trial run in the Ireland job, and probably allows him to scratch an itch that might be there.
Yeah, I think it's perfect. Obviously, he has head coach experience, having been at the Scarlets, and obviously it was a very difficult time with resources being cut on him. So he's come back. He's obviously done forwards and defence. And then latterly or recently, since Paulie came in, he's just been doing the defence. But very highly regarded, the most experienced of that coaching group. Obviously, with Andrew Goodman having stepped in now for Mike Cass. A well-respected bit of players. And I think that's Ireland don't need to do anything too drastic, you know, and his relationship with Farrell, I'd imagine Farrell will be keeping a very close eye on things. even though he's obviously taken a step back for the Six Nations. There's no doubt that I think that, you know, Simon will take counsel from Farrell and we'd have that consistency. But I think it's perfect because, one, you get an idea of what potentially the transition would be post Farrell, and Simon gets a chance to try it and develop. And then secondly, I think Farrell gets that opportunity to freshen up a bit. You know, obviously he's been with Ireland now since 2015, and he's had one World Cup cycle as head coach. He's going to go to the next World Cup, but this gap year as such, or sabbatical for the Lions tour, I think gives him a chance to work with different coaches, different players, and just freshen up. And I actually think that this Irish coaching staff look very settled. And someone was asking me from England, there was someone from England last week, an agent, and they were saying, oh, where will Farrell go post Australia? And I actually thought about it, and I actually think he may stay another cycle, you know. Like the setup here, compared to what's happening in the other unions, you know, France have kind of got their act together, but the English, the RFU, the WRU, the SRU all have their issues. Here you've got a very solid foundation. You're working for a very pragmatic and strong union in the RFU. Plus you've got, you know, a talent pool. It's well remunerated. Yeah, I think we could Farrell could end up doing three World Cups, but then what you want to have is coaches underneath him who are happy to stay with him, and obviously I think, you know, from a personality point of view, that's not a problem, but little opportunities to develop them in their own way. And this is one certainly for Simon that I think he'll grasp with both hands, and it makes sense for everybody.
Yeah, and Johnny, and that's one of those things as well with Easterby, where, as Bernard mentioned, it's been a very stable coaching ticket down the years with Ireland. Like, Simon Easterby, as the example, has been there, what, the guts of 10 years now. And it would make me wonder, why hasn't he been headhunted by someone else? Or maybe he could well have had a handful of offers down the years to get head coach gigs at, you know, clubs or to be involved with other nations as well that we might not have heard of. But these things, it does, you know, if Andy Farrell was to stay for potentially another World Cup cycle beyond, these kind of things, they satisfy a coach and give them the opportunity to show what they're capable of.
Yeah, and I think it works both ways, because I think everyone wants to be the head coach someday, but when you step into those shoes, you probably get, sometimes people go, I'm happy enough if he drives it and I get to contribute to it, knowing that that he has had that experience as well. But I think Simon Easterby seems like a very solid guy. And when you get put in a kind of a coaching team with someone like Andy Farrell, who, as Bernard said, like personality-wise, I think he manages people very well with a union that's very stable. You know, someone like Simon Easterby getting this opportunity, but knowing he gets to hand it back, I think it's there's a lot of freedom in that, like, isn't there? There might be pressure working as Andy Farrell, but the one thing I kind of find interesting is, you know, Andy Farrell, from my understanding, does a lot of the attack stuff. He's very involved. He's not a man manager in terms of what happens on the ground in the day to day. So I'd love to know who's, like, I know Andrew Goodman is there and he'll do the attack, but will it be up to the same kind of level or standard that Andy Farrell expects of people? Because I've spoken to one or two people and, you know, the standards are huge. They're like, you don't get away with much. I was told, you know, feels like you're nearly being dropped every time you get selected, you know, these kind of things. So it's the standards are through the roof. So trying to drive that without him, and as Bernard said, he'd be there in the background, but I'd love to know, you know, how much will he be doing in the background? How much will that take out of him? Because he's trying to prepare for two things then, you know. So it can be a difficult situation, I'd say, but there's a lot of knock-on positives to it, like Bernard has gone through, but it's going to be a difficult stance as well.
Yeah, just on that, I think the fact that Goodman is new, but he would have a very strong idea of what they do from, obviously, his exposure to Irish players. And even though Leinster's attack was very different than Ireland's, he'd be very well aware of it. And Farrell is here for November. So there's that period where he can transition. And they may bring another coach in. They may bring another coach in just to fill that gap. I think they're looking to add one more, potentially. Not for November, not necessarily for November, because obviously Farrell is still here, but could come in November and be there then in the Six Nations, and that'd be interesting as well. So look, it's it's a nice position to be in. And also from a Simon Easterby point of view, there's no doubt he would have been offered head coach jobs. But the reality is, I think an assistant coach in Ireland is probably not far off financially what head coaches are making now, just the way the market has gone in the last 2 or 3 years. And then you have the different workload. And I'm not saying the international coaches don't work hard, but it's effectively
rather than being
35 or 6 weeks of the year. Mm-hmm. It's super focused for shorter blocks. Plus, you hadn't have the big occasions, the All Blacks coming on a Friday night to the Viva, Six Nations, World Cups, you know, and obviously then you have your summer tour. So that's unfortunately, at the moment, the international game, the gap seems to be gone bigger than it was the club game. Maybe that's not unfair, but I certainly think in terms of glamour and sustainability, the gap has got further away. Obviously, you have a European Cup final like Toulouse, Leinster, and I'm not talking about the standard, and that occasion is massive, but there's probably a lot of games where, for certain coaches, it wouldn't give you the same adrenaline buzz that, you know, a Six Nations or a November series against the All Blacks does.
Mm. Well, Easterby's doing a press conference a little bit later on this morning. We'll see, does anyone ask him if he's turned down any jobs over the years? He'll be announcing his emerging Ireland squad as we're recording it in a few minutes. So if it does come in live, we'll read it out and we'll see what we think of it on the spot. I'll skip ahead though to the URC, because obviously that's starting this weekend. Big game of this weekend, Munster against Connacht, 5:30 p.m. at Thomond Park, live on RT2 and RT Player, and also commentary on RT Radio 1 as well. I got into the mood for the new season, Johnny, there yesterday. We were down in Thomond Park. Munster invited the media down for an open training session, which was great, because normally we get 10-minute snippets at the start of training where we're just kind of watching players, you know, stretching, kicking a ball around, maybe doing a few line-out throws, but really being able to see the drills up close in person and see the speed at which they're training non-stop, particularly with a group of between 50 and 60 players, between first team and academy players as well, really, really was interesting. And we got to sit down with Graham Rowntree, Billy Burns, Ian Costello, got some great detail from Costello actually about his role as head of rugby operations and how they're trying to expand themselves around the province. But we'll have more on that later on in the week. But Munster this season, what's the ultimate goal here? Aside from putting an actual target on like trophies, but surely the big thing I would say is needing to get away from boom or bust form, where, you know, if you are going to win 12 games over a course of whatever, 17, 18 weeks, don't win six in a row and then lose a handful in a row and then win another six in a row. They're, I suppose, just trying to spread out the season rather than doing it in boom or bust form.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned it there that you saw how fast they train, and we've seen that. Like, we were lucky enough to be invited in a few times as well, and I've seen that over the course of, we're probably talking about that for 2 years now, aren't we? Yeah. And the URC win and stuff like that. I don't know, was it kind of victims of circumstance or by design that they had quite a tough injury list as well, like, didn't they?
In each of those seasons, the midsection of it was a chronic injury list.
Yeah, and that's kind of disrupted their ability to maybe take on Europe. And I remember thinking in the Northampton game, and then sickness went through them. I was looking at the squad thinking, is that the squad that really should have a crack off anyone in Europe? Like, when you really put it down on paper, you know? And they've lost some big players, I think, but they've also brought in some very astute signings. You know, I think there's obviously Thacker Abrahams will give them that kind of X factor. And I know that has to be backed up by a scrum and a maul and everything else and an accurate lineup. But, you know, you have someone like that can break up the game. I don't know, this might be harsh, but last time we've really seen that at the high end of Europe was Andrew Conway and was it Toulouse?
Toulon,
sorry. With that wonder try near the end, like, someone that can just break up the game. But at the same time, like, I'm looking at, you lose Joey Carberry, who, you know, was in and out with injury and everything else. But, like, Billy Burns is such a high-profile signing as a first or second choice 10, and I suppose a second choice for now. Tom Farrell, a bit of glue in midfield. Like, he's a lot of experience. But you lose guys like RG Snyman, and, you know, it's going to be tough to replace someone like that. But, like, how much did they get out of him anyway? You know, so I still think they should be having, like, yeah, they'll want to get back. The URC is a very tough competition now to be very consistent in, and there's a lot of competition there. But they really need to make inroads into Europe, I think, to look like they're kind of still sitting at that European table, getting into a semi-final or something like that, I think would be showing progress. No, they obviously wouldn't think within the squad they're going to win that, obviously, like you have to. But realistically, I think if people saw them getting back to the top four of Europe, you start getting very serious about what they can do.
Yeah, and Bruno, what Johnny said there is actually something I did want to bring up, where I think for the last few months, a lot of us have kind of been saying that if you look at Munster's entire squad on paper this season compared to last season, it's probably not as strong a squad. But how often did they actually get to play their strongest team on paper last season anyway?
Yeah, look, it's just the injury thing. I mean, that's my understanding of that, and certainly what I experienced in Grenoble and the Dragons is when you do up the intensity of training, a lot of players break, and then they rebuild, and then they become more robust. So they've had two seasons of that now. It should be, and the fact is, the great thing is because they quickly upped the number of players training, effectively all that 50 get exposed to it, and you know, so the youngsters coming through now, and the way they there's an alignment between the academy and the senior team. There's obviously alignment with the clubs. That should be done now, and I think they should have a stronger squad this year. I agree with you. I think on paper, unfortunately, they're weaker. And then you have the age profile of Pete and Connor and Kilcoyne and John Ryan and Archer. You know, all another season older with a lot of game time under the belt. All still, hopefully, going to have big seasons for Munster, but and hopefully Ireland as well. Some of them, but the reality is, they actually, if they can have more players fit, they'll be in a lot stronger position. And then they have the likes of Kilgallen, who I think is a very good signing. I know Connor were very keen to keep him. He's got a lot of potential. Tom Farrell is a creative centre, a real 13 who are hard to get, particularly Irish qualified, experienced, an opportunity for him to rebuild his career a little bit. It went a little bit sour in the end in Connacht for him, obviously, was going to be let go, and in fairness, Munster jumped in and were able to give him another opportunity, and he has the talent. So, and then Abrahams gives him that X factor, and the way they want to play, you know, their shapes are very detailed, they're very good, but just sometimes you need someone who can actually beat someone one-on-one. And my friend is coaching in Leon. He's a tack coach in Leon. AB's on there, and
he joined us last year.
Yeah, he joined us last year, and he's still in Leon. Had a great win the weekend. Beat Bordeaux a last minute kick, but they were good to lose him. They were good to lose him, and he's someone who'd been in Toulouse. You know, he's used to having players with X factor who can turn a game, and I think Abrahams could be a very astute signing. He's not a Delande. Delande, you know, he's not a Christian Cullen in terms of his profile globally, but he could be just someone who's perfectly suited to the way Munster want to play and come in under the radar. And I agree with Johnny. I think Billy Burns, I mean, Crowley had to play a lot last year, and he seems to love playing, and there's nothing wrong with that, but having someone else there, it's clear Crowley is number one for Ireland at the moment. And again, you know, who knows what management they need to do his game time this year for Munster. And I could actually see them playing together sometimes late in games as well. So I think they've, with a pretty limited budget, I think they've recruited pretty well.
Yeah, and based on what Graham Rowntree was saying yesterday, Billy Burns has been in very, very well so far. He's only on a 12-month deal, but Rowntree was telling us yesterday they'd more than happily be looking to start talks on extending that fairly soon as well. Last one on Munster before I bring in Connacht and this weekend's game, Johnny. Like, we've been talking the last couple of minutes about Tacir Abrahams and X Factor. John Klein is going to be bringing whatever the more blunt version of X Factor is back in. Looks like this weekend he was out there training, doing a full session yesterday. It looks like he's absolutely ready to go. How badly they missed him last season, just got one game out of him after he came back from the World Cup. They played against Leinster and he's been out ever since. He's going to be like a new signing for them pretty much this season.
That's actually what I was thinking last night when I was looking through some of their squad lists and their fellas that are like signings. Like, you know, it's John Klein coming back into that. He's like a demolition man, isn't he? Inside in the contact area and mauls and stuff. He's a monster of a man. So I think he's a huge addition back into the squad. But likewise, you know, once Edwin Odogbo comes back and Sean Odogbo now is on the radar, they've got some monstrous forwards. And, you know, I think you need that depth when you're going to challenge, even in the URC now. You know, going week to week, it's very physical. The South African teams coming into it has made it more complex. But yeah, John Kline is, you know, he's obviously got international caps in two different directions. Like, he's got a lot of experience, and you can't, like, that's bringing him back in is a huge plus.
Yeah, and then Bernard, on Connacht this weekend, based on what I've seen in preseason, it really looks like they're trying to hit the ground running and get a fast start. I know they got a very fast start last season and it didn't work out too well, but is one crucial thing this season going to be the sheer fact that Mac Hansen didn't play since January means they're going to have a clean run of him in the team pretty much right up through to November. They're going to be able to use him as much as they want between now and this first international break.
Yeah, look, he's going to be like a new player. And Santi as well. Like, he got a little bit of game time at the very end of the season. But like, yeah, he was missing, and he has X factor. Mac has X factor. Obviously, they've made a signing to make up for JJ, who had a really good season for them, and hopefully his injury and his rehab is going well. Prendergast being announced as captain, I think, you know, young captain, new voice, someone who's super ambitious, super professional. I think they made some changes around their coaching organization. My understanding is that Pete Wilkins has taken back over defense. It was a problem area for them last year. So my understanding is that Sexton has taken more of a role for the general team attack. He was doing backs attack last year with Wilkins, being very, very like Farrell. Wilkins obviously had started as a defense coach and then became a more of an attack coach. But Scott Fardy had come in to do the defense, and I think they've looked at maybe shore up that a little bit. It was a weakness for them. And P. Wilkins is taking more responsibility there. My understanding is with Fardy doing more contact skills, etc. So look, they've made a few little changes, off the field. There was lots of things they needed to fix. You know, obviously they missed out on the URC playoffs, missed out in Europe. And for them, that's not where they want to be anymore. They have a new stadium that's under construction. There's an excitement around that. They look in a good place. They look in a good place. Obviously, a couple of local fellas, Hugh Gavin, coming through the academy. We saw the likes of Divine last year. 4G pitch, which would suit that kind of open rugby. But it's going to be harder for them because I think the sports ground is going to be an easier place to go to without that Clan Terrace, you know. And the 4G pitch, ironically, makes it easier to go to from an away team as well. So not going to be easy for them. But my understanding is they've had a very good preseason. They had a friendly against Bristol last week. Very high scoring game, which wouldn't sound great for the defense, but the preseason games can be like that. Yeah. But they got enough out of it to believe that they're in a good place. And if nothing else, preseason is just an opportunity for that, particularly if you've had a disappointment season like they had, just to give the players the confidence that they're on the right track. Because it was tough for them last year with so many high profile players moving on and so many players who were kind of legacy players in the dressing room there. For financial reasons, they kind of needed that good preseason, and my understanding is that they feel they've had it.
One of the players Bernard mentioned there, Johnny, was Hugh Gavin, and it's a funny one. Like, we're all very excited about this guy who still hasn't actually made his senior debut in a competitive game. But when you look at what Connacht did in the summer, where they released both Tom Farrell and Tom Daly, two experienced centres, it doesn't take a genius to join the dots and get the feeling that we're going to be seeing quite a bit of Hugh Gavin this season. He's going to be getting quite a few minutes. And I think he's someone right across the four provinces, I'd say, I'm looking forward to seeing most.
Yeah, like he's certainly exciting, and he's got the physical build for it. I think there's still a step up, you know, I think he'll be well able. And I think the 20s campaigns these days allows them to be very capable of stepping into URC rugby quite quickly. Like, I think they're quite organised and they get a lot from it. So, I think we will see a lot of him, but rightly so, he's a very good player. But my worry with Connacht, and Byrne has gone through a lot of positives on it, and people like Santiago Cordero is like a signing. Mac Hansen is nearly like a signing, and then you have Joshua Anne. But like, So they've like the top end will look very good. I think Cian Prendergast is class. I think like being a captain, he's someone I love watching. But I worry about their squad size and their academy now, because maybe it's actually something that when I'm looking through the academy squads, and I did it last night, I was kind of going, I know a lot of the Leinster one and the Munster one, obviously, even in Ulster, because they play a lot of top end AIL, and I've just come across them. So that's my own bias, to be fair. I haven't come across as much of the Connacht Academy. I don't know, is it young or is it just because of the level of rugby in Connacht in the AIL? So that's something that kind of worried me then, the depth, you know, once you go behind those lines, is something that, you know, a full season exposes. So I think they will have their moments, but between themselves and Ulster, I thought there was a lot going out and a lot going through their academy being kind of promoted, and that's something that would worry me across the full URC season. And then for teams that are in Europe, like it's a lot of rugby and it's a lot of management, especially when an injury list comes up. So I think that's something that I'd be worried about.
Yeah, just on that, I agree with you, Johnny. I don't think they have the depth, and there is that transition from those academy lads promoted to become as capable as the Tom Farrells, the Tom Daly's, etc. But I do think the Challenge Cup for them this year is a bit of a gift. I think that it'll allow them rotate a little bit more, less eyes on them. Realistically, I don't think they'll win a Challenge Cup, but it may help them. It may help them get more URC points. So I felt last year, for example, you know, a heavy defeat at home to Bordeaux, the knock to the confidence, the effect on the bodies, probably cost them a point or two in the URC in the weeks that followed it. Mm-hmm. Whereas this year, they can either get confidence coming out of the Challenge Cup, but more importantly, be able to rotate a little bit and be fresher and maybe take advantage of the teams, you know, who have had, you know, big Champions Cup games and get a scalp or at least get a point that they maybe wouldn't have got. So I don't think their squad is good enough to be Champions Cup team, even though the Champions Cup was diluted. And I think that hopefully can help them this year get back into the Champions Cup the year after, with some of those youngsters having had experience and being better able to play Champions Cup or top URC the year after.
Mm-hmm. So that's Munster and Connacht, 5:30 p.m. kickoff this Saturday evening, live on RT2 and RT Player and RT Radio 1 as well. Leinster are the first Irish province in action this season. They're away to Edinburgh on Friday night. And Johnny, it's going to be a very interesting year, I think, following Leinster, because it can often be relatively dull from a narrative point of view to cover them over the season, because most things just go their way for so long. And it's really only until the last couple of months of the season where we're really judging them. But I think there's just a few more storylines with the province this year. Obviously, there's the big signings, but then there's just things like who is playing out half. And it's clear we're in a situation where Leo Cullen and Andy Farrell are looking at a couple of the same players, but seeing very different playing profiles there, whether it's Kieran Frawley or whether it's Jamie Osborne, was playing at full back this summer. There's just a couple of little interesting nuggets in there, I think.
Yeah, there are, but like I think the out half situation has gone, like it's been talked about, and then it seems like everyone thinks Kieran Frawley should be in there. I personally think that, you know, I still don't understand. Now I know, like, you know, I don't get to see Ross Byrne week to week, and you know how someone facilitates a game and how what they do for a group, I don't get to see that. So like I'm not saying that I have the choice on it or not, but like Kieran Frawley would just open up their game completely, wouldn't he? I think anytime he's stood up at 10, I think he's been very good. I don't really understand why we're still going with the same thing, that why they would go with the same thing that hasn't really converted for them. So I don't think there's a debate there, to be honest. But there are a lot of storylines within that. I think the pressure has now come on them again. I think people are talking about them, whether they care about that or not inside is up to themselves. But I think there is a little bit of a pressure. And then with a couple of high profile signings, like they need to get the business done, I think, for their, they'll want to do that anyway. But the optics, if you don't get the business, some sort of business done, a trophy, with what they've signed and what they actually have and what they develop, in fairness to them, you know, I wouldn't go away from that. They do develop it and the players. So the depth there is ridiculous. Having that conversation around out half, like the four of them, I think, plus there's plenty more. They have so much depth. They need to, obviously they know it, but they need to get a trophy, URC or Europe. It doesn't really matter.
Bernard?
I think the problem for Leinster management is it's going to be very hard to ignore Frawley now. And I think they're going to have... So my frustration last year was, I think we saw enough in the little bits we saw to say he warranted an opportunity. And he never really, he didn't, certainly didn't get a consistent run of games at 10. And he was like that Swiss Army knife for them, you know, where he'd fill in somewhere else or off the bench. Obviously, he's a phenomenal option to have, particularly if you're looking at 6-2s, etc. So, and now they've failed again to win silverware. And what he did this summer in a short time period. But I also think, I look back, because I'm fascinated by him and his ceiling. So I look back at when he came on in the final at 10, obviously, and then obviously when he came on in South Africa. And both times, some of the stuff he did was incredibly impressive. Even going for those drop goals against Toulouse that he missed.
Yeah,
I mean, that was you know, Leinster were crying out for that against La Rochelle the year before. And
even like, you know, I remember we were saying at the time, like even the timing of the first drop goal at the end of regulation, was it where he actually went early, but yes, safe in the knowledge that if he missed, he was going to get an opportunity to go again.
100%. And I actually, let's just deal with the drop goals first. I actually thought the first drop goal against South Africa, he was thinking at a different level than most of us would. You know what I mean? Because at that stage, there's still loads of time. And he had the wherewithal and the balls to actually just take it on. And like that, if a guy who had 50, 60 caps did that, we'd be praising him, you know? And the reality is he'd come on in a test match. The game had kind of swung against Ireland. We had no ball really for most of that second half. And he just had the wherewithal to take three. And then obviously the second one is a clutch moment. But in both games, particularly the game against Toulouse, when he had the ball in hand, he just, such a different threat than Ross had been. So he is a threat, and he's not perfect. But he is a threat. And I think he'll get more. He showed an ability to get Toulouse on the back foot defensively, where up to then they'd been kind of quite comfortable. So that's the challenge. And the challenge for Ross is to add another layer to his game and prove that he's better than Frawls. And in fairness to Ross is very mentally strong. The difference is, like, Blindale was in for a little while and then he went home to New Zealand for the birth of his child. So there's been a fractured enough preseason from that point of view. So I don't think we're going to see any massive difference in Leinster's attack early. But what I'd love to, what I'm fascinated to see is Leo going to give Frawley an opportunity at 10? And does he take it? And, you know, I think for Farrell's point of view, Frawley doesn't need to necessarily be the starting 10 for Leinster all season, but if certainly it will help. It would help if he had some game time there, because it's a big ask expecting him to come off the bench and be right or overs all the time without really having game time there, you know. And also you've got Sam. And the other thing Leinster would have to look at is this rotation. And it's brilliant because, you know, you very rarely hear Leinster players unhappy. They all seem to want to stay. And there's obviously, you spoke about Simon Easterby. There's no doubt the likes of Max Deegan, Scott Penny, etc., could go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Up till now, very few have looked to go elsewhere. And I think the rotation kind of gives them all enough that they're happy. But it hasn't necessarily led to Leinster winning as much as they should. And is that going to change? I mean, I'd love to be a fly on the wall and actually see how Leinster have analysed the last two or three years. And is it just bad luck? Is it just to find margins? Or is there things that they're going to do differently to try and get that European Cup? URC, obviously, they haven't had that for 2 years either. So, but European Cup and potentially URC trophy. Because I think they need one now. I mean, especially when you add RG and Barrett, the pressure's on. Now, having said that, in Europe, I think this Toulouse team could be a generational side. You know what I mean? Like, they have the potential to go on and be one of the best Toulouse teams ever, because their age profile, the way they play, the resilience they seem to have, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not saying that a European Cup is in any way taken for granted, but realistically for Leinster, they need to be getting one of those pretty soon, I would say.
Absolutely. Well, long season ahead. I do want to mention Ulster as well, though, Johnny, before we let you go. They're hosting Glasgow on Saturday evening. It's got to make, I don't know what to make of this Ulster season coming ahead, because there's been so much change in the last few months. There was a much better feeling around them towards the tail end of last season. But ultimately, this campaign coming ahead it's a blank canvas. It could turn out very, very well, but obviously it could go the other way entirely. What would you suggest is the realistic outcome for them? What offer could you make Richie Murphy right now for like his result at the end of the season that you reckon he'd shake your hand on?
I think for Richie Murphy, he's going to want to get a home semi-final. Like, I don't think that should be... He has to do that. For me, looking at Ulster now, I think they're well capable of doing that, but getting into the playoffs without struggling, with a bit of confidence and rolling into it with a couple of wins, you know, they can do damage from there. But obviously, you know, it needs to be more than a plucky season that last year was. Like, obviously, we're pulling it together. Richie Murphy has a better chance to get his preseason together, and he's given fellas chances. But that, you know, that kind of freshness and whatever else, that kind of plucky attitude is gone now. They need to be very consistent. I think he'd take a home semi final and have a good crack off that league. Whereas I think in reality, again, looking at their squad in and out, I think there could be patches that become difficult, especially like, I don't think it's the second season thing, you know, because they didn't have a full crack at it last season. But what kind of the bounce that they got last year under Richie with the players that they gave the opportunities to is kind of known now, isn't it? So I think the out half situation will be interesting as well up there. So I think they could struggle for periods of the year, but I think they will get into a playoff and have a crack off it. Whether it's a home semi final or not, I think will be difficult.
Thanks a million, Johnny. I'll let you go now because I know you've somewhere important to be. Bernard, I might keep you on just for another few more minutes just to wrap everything up. And good luck at the weekend, Johnny, and for the whole season as well. But to continue on Ulster then, Bernard, so like I suppose it's, how would you describe it? There's a low floor, but there's a high ceiling there for what could happen with Ulster and Richie Murphy. But I suppose what's exciting some fans is, you know, he's not just going for the safe option. He's taking chances on things. He's taking a punt on some young players. Look at how Cormac Izuchukwu's campaign finished last season. He's someone we're really going to look forward to seeing over the course of a full season if he can keep his fitness. And even something like bringing Zach Ward in on a trial and trying to convert him to a winger. Look, it might turn out to be a complete disaster, but it's really interesting to see someone try something like this.
Yeah, it is. And look, he will. He knows what the standard is for the best young players in the country. You know, he's seen the best in Connacht, Munster, Leinster and Ulster over the last while. He's shown that he has an ability to give them confidence, to coach them really well. And I think he will trust youth. I think that he already has won the confidence of the fans, and I think he already won the confidence of players, and that was a big help. It's often difficult to come in late in the season like that and, you know, salvage something, but he did enough that everyone felt they're on the right track. I think he was able to make he's able to bring Jimmy Duffy in as someone he's worked with before as well, and just change up that forward coaching voice. McCluskey has now decided to stay. I know he was under contract anyway for another year, but he's re-signed for longer. He would have been a big loss to them, even just the message that would send, you know, the message that would send. And I think Werner Kock, I was shocked when he made that signing, to be honest. Mm. And
it felt like as much the timing of when it was announced as much as anything.
I was done before that, to be fair, but
yeah.
It's for me, when you look at Ulster's playing squad, it wasn't an area that they were lacking depth in. You could argue all you want about quality and players reaching their potential and being slow to reach their potential there. But there's certainly a lot of potential there. But he's someone who's tried and tested, is a competitor, is a warrior, is a dog. I don't think he's the best finisher in the world. I don't think he's got a huge amount of X factor, etc. But I think he could become someone that the fans absolutely love and a dressing room love, and he won't take a backward step. And you know, he's battle hardened. He's been on the seven circuit. He's lots of experience in 15s, and he's an absolute competitor. I don't know many wingers like him, to be fair. So yeah, he could be someone who, again, kind of like Abrahams in Munster, who wasn't that expensive, not that high profile, but could be exactly what Ulster need. And I'm really looking forward to seeing them play. Obviously, we were very lucky watching Richie's under-20s teams. They had a very positive attitude to playing attacking rugby at the right times. And Ulster had kind of under Dan had changed kind of focus a few times, you know, and never really, like when Dan came in from Glasgow first, obviously in Scotland, obviously, you know, that's how Glasgow had been successful, was this kind of ball in hand, high tempo game. It never really came to fruition. The lineout mall was their biggest weapon, yeah. You know? So I'm looking forward to seeing that settle down. And look at, as Richie, I think, has said in press conferences, there will be days where, you know, it goes pear-shaped because they're young and they're trying to learn. But I think they will have enough good days that they'll be in a better position. And they'll be there. They'll be in the playoffs again. Home semi, realistically, when you look at their squad and you see the South Africans and you see the Sharks, what they've recruited. And I know the Sharks were useless last year. But, you know, it's only a matter of time before they actually get their heads together. And they should be a force. I think home semi could be... Oh, look, it's obviously achievable. I think that would be a phenomenal first year for Richie, and this is his first year. I mean, you know, really, realistically.
Yeah. So I mean, like, and as I say, even if they don't get a home semi-final, but or home quarter-final, but if they finish in sixth place, get Champions Cup qualification, and finish in sixth place without too much stress.
Yeah.
Like, ultimately, does that work out as a fairly reasonable season and something nice to build on?
Yeah, it does. I think it is. And look at making Ravenhill rock again.
Yeah.
You know, I'm lucky enough to go up there. I have done up there for the last 10 years with TV or radio. And like when it's home and it's special, you know, it really is. And again, last year, there wasn't enough of those nights. There was at the end when they beat Leinster. It started to turn again, but it had gone quite tepid and you could sense that dissatisfaction or frustration in the crowd even. And so just getting that back, I think, would be look, he's already gone some way to doing it. And local players and seeing guys like Zach, as you said, you know, get a chance. Because I think that's been the... Look, I'm actually, you know, I've done a few dinners up there, and you get a chat to talk to, you know, club people, and they would feel that there is some talent up there that if they, because they didn't make the academy, they've been written off. And seeing someone like him be brought back in, even as a trial basis, it just gives them all a bit of hope.
Well, funnily enough, Ulster will actually be without him for a little while in the next couple of weeks. He's part of that emerging Ireland squad, as is Cormac Isichuk. Well, just read it out quickly here. Jack Ainger, Jack Boyle, James Culhan, Jordan Duggan, Sean Adogbo, Ronan Fox, Cormac Isichuku, Sean Jansen, Alex Kandelan is going to be captain for it, Gus McCarthy, Dara Murray, Evan O'Connell, Conor O'Tiernig, Danny Sheehan, Harry Sheridan, Stephen Smith, Alex Soroka and Scott Wilson are the forwards. Then 15 backs, you have Shane Bolton, Hugh Cooney, Ethan Coughlin, Matt Devine, Cormac Foley, Hugh Gavin, Jack Murphy, Tommy O'Brien, Sean O'Brien of Munster, Ben O'Connor, Andrew Osborne, Jude Postlewaith, Sam Prendergast, Rob Russell, and Zach Ward. I know I've thrown a lot of names at you out there. Any handful that just
yeah, the hookers. The hookers my own position. So Gus McCarthy, obviously, won an SCT with Blackrock under-20s last year, as Danny Sheehan was as well. Danny Sheehan from Cork Con. Both two players I like. I think they've got lots of growth to do physically, but there's a certain level of skill there and attitude, which I like. Obviously, Sam Prendergast, we're all following him. Zach Ward, you know, Isichuku, we know a lot about him now. There's a few names there, like Rob Russell, you know, they're kind of experienced. Rob Russell and Cormac Isichuku are kind of more the experienced ones. Then Jansen has been good for Connacht. He's tough. Hugh Cooney is someone who that I race. Alex Soroka, like, he's just one of the guys that, like, how good was he when in school and how good was he in under-20s?
And just had a bad run of injuries.
Run of injury and just can't get games in that Leinster group. So, like, a talent, like, the confidence he would get from getting that phone call last night or yesterday or email and getting a chance to go away with those guys. You know, for the lads out, for the fellas who've outgrown under-20s, who get blocked because of, you know, depth ahead of them, which they're obviously the Leinster, there's lots, or have had injuries. Like, this can be a turning point for them, you know, in terms of getting game time and coming back to the province fresh and believing in yourself, but also potentially putting your hand up that for fire. Andrew Osborne, obviously, Jamie's younger brother, you know, we know about him. I have to have a look at it now, but my initial impression is that's a great squad. And also, like, I was anti the Emerging Ireland Tour last time.
You were,
not because I think touring is a bad thing. It was sprung on the provinces quite late, and some of the players that went were needed by them to win points. And that, I feel sorry for coaches when that happens. Listen to that squad, and I'd have to do a comparison, but my gut feeling is it's younger, less experienced than the last one, which I think, given the fact that the international players are allowed back early, you know, the provinces should still be able to pick up points in the URC and release players like that to Ireland, where they are going to get development. So that's a win-win for me. It's a different scenario completely than the last time. I felt it was just rammed in without much consultation.
Yeah, like, even just having a quick scan of it now myself, I would say there's probably a good chunk, the vast majority, I would say, of it are fellas from that crop of under-20s teams in the last 2-3 seasons. And in fairness, a lot of them still would have played together as well, so there's a decent bit of continuity. Before we finish up, I do just want to mention, we'll go more in depth on them next week when we get closer to the WXV, but an excellent win for Ireland women's team against Australia at the weekend, 36-10 against the Wallaroos in Belfast. I know we're going to have to be tempering expectations when they go over to the WXV in a couple of weeks, because they're playing New Zealand and Canada. And look, you know, on paper, they're obviously much better than where Ireland are at the moment. But if you look over the last 12 months, Birch, of where Ireland were when Scott Beaman picked them up and where they are now, you can see how far they've grown. And there's a lot of enthusiasm out there for where they can go in the next 2 to 5 years.
Yeah, it was a brilliant performance. You could argue the quality of Australia, but when you look at actually how Ireland played, some of the skill, the fitness levels, the technical ability, it was amazing, really. Because, to be honest, watching into pros, while there's some great games, to my eye, it didn't look like it had moved forward massively from where it was last year, but they've gone into Ireland camp and it's all kind of come together. And I think the result they had and the qualification for WXV1 has given them, look, at they were shot of confidence. Like everything was negative, negative, negative. Yeah. They were finding hard to get results. They were in the public eye. And I just think the results they got, while they weren't convincing at times, seems to have transformed them. And while they're going to go back into a very tough level of competition again, I think there's enough there. And like, they brought in, like, the RFU, and you know, I could be challenged on this, and I'm sure there's people who feel they should be doing more. But in terms of that coaching group that's currently there, I mean, Alex Codling was head coach in Newcastle. He's worked in the top 14. And some people would say, oh, you know, the idea of getting men's coaches and transferring to the women's isn't what the game needs, etc. But just in terms of actually going out there and finding people who have experience, Hugh Hogan, obviously, you know, was Leinster contact skills coach, went to Scarlets, went to Japan, and is now back, you know, helping out, you know, Dennis Fogarty as well, as part of the overall management team. So I think the RFU have invested in coaches at that level. Again, I don't doubt as people feel they should be doing more in the club game and all that stuff, but they seem to have given that team the support around them to be able to compete at the top level. And based on Ravenhill, it looks like that they've turned the corner, and that's that'd be great. And I know that it's gonna be hard where they're heading to, but as long as they actually have, you know, a feel they're getting better and are getting better, they'll be fine.
Yeah, and it was one thing that has come up in the last couple of weeks. We've been out doing media around these games in the last couple of weeks, and one thing both Beamond and some of the players have been saying is that it has already been spoken about how they react to what happens over the next few weeks, because I think a lot of people have cited Wales as a good example of probably ended up in that top tier of WXV ahead of schedule, sort of kind of where Ireland have found themselves now. And you look at how their Six Nations form, they looked a little bit beaten by the whole experience. Yeah. And I think that's probably where we're really going to be judging Ireland in next year's Six Nations rather than what happens over the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, 100%. I think this will actually help them in the Six Nations by just getting used to playing better opposition.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. We'll call it there for the day. We crammed in a lot into the last, whatever, 40, 45 minutes. Where are you at this weekend? Where are you on duty?
Would you believe I'm on duty in OMA? OMA Rugby Club. I'm speaking at their President's Dinner. So I'm going to go up early. They're playing. I got invited up to watch the AAL game. They're playing Clonmel at 2:30. So I'm going to go up there, watch that. Then watch the Connacht Munster game from the bar there. And then try and say a few words and not embarrass myself in the speech. So, yeah, that's my plan. I had agreed to it before fixtures came out. So I'm glad to do it. And yeah. They seem like a great club. And I did Belfast Harlequins last year and had a great night. So looking forward to that.
Great.